From the campus of the University of Pennsylvania Wharton School, this is Marketing Matters on Business Radio.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to Marketing Matters here on Business Radio, Sirius XM 132. I'm Barbara Kahn, the Patty and J.H. Baker Professor of Marketing, and I'm joined by my guest co-host today, Annie Wilson. She's been here before. She's a behavioral scientist and a professor of marketing at the Wharton School. Hello, Annie. Thank you for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Substituting for Americus, who once again is off somewhere, didn't tell me where. But he'll be back soon, and it's really lovely to have Annie join us today. And just a reminder, we are live. If you'd like to ask us or any of our guests a question throughout today's show, please feel free to call in at 1-844-WHARTON. That's 1-844-942-7866. Our phone lines are open, and we're happy to take your calls. And today we have a really good show. We're going to start our marketing news hit or miss section with Luz Corona, who's the community editor at Adweek. And Luz, I'm going to explain to you how hit or miss works. We start out and you're going to tell us some stories, some things that you've been covering, and then we're going to decide if it's a hit or a miss.
Hit.
Okay. Let's do it.
Or miss.
Just a bit outside.
Okay. So that's how it's going to go. And so Luz, you're the community editor. So does that mean that you kind of write about and think about what the community's doing? Is that what community editor means?
A little bit of everything. Mainly I kind of oversee our voice section, which is our op-ed section. So kind of curating that and thinking of different ways of how to bring it to life. And in between, I also co-host our flagship podcast. Yeah, that's probably an ad. We should have you guys on there.
Go right ahead. Tell us about that podcast. We're happy to. We're Marketing Matters. We want to know what marketing's doing. So what's your podcast?
Yeah, so it's called Yeah, That's Probably an Ad. It's our flagship podcast. Yeah, it's our flagship podcast at Adweek. And basically, we talk, it's described as, you know, the scrappy team at Adweek discusses, you know, creative campaigns or any big initiatives or kind of chatter going on in the advertising world. And every week we have a different guest to speak on it.
Oh, great. So you know a lot of what's going on and you're very trendy. So why don't you tell us about some of the trends that you're following? And Annie and I can weigh in as to whether or not we think it's a hit or a miss.
Yeah, for sure. So we just came out of our week-long event called Social Media Week. That was last week. And we learned a lot about what's going on in the creator world and a lot of trends that are coming out. So I'd love to share that with you ladies, if that's okay.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay. So first, I'd like to give our team really put an excellent lineup of programming together. We had people like Meg Thee Stallion, Hannah Berner, Brandon Blackwood there, and they all chimed in. Basically, one of the key takeaways is the current standing of social platforms depends on who you ask. So we had a panel with, you know, our head of social, Sammy, and social media consultants, Peyton Dix, Rachel Carton, and Jade Powell. And there's different takes on all these social platforms. So, you know, when it comes to Twitter, the truth is we really haven't seen the mass exodus that we thought would continue, you know, after everything that happened last year on Twitter/X. Threads has reached the plateau, just kind of reached, you know, what else can you do on there besides just post? And emerging platforms like Spill have focused on uplifting Black, brown, and queer creators, and it's viewed as the platform of choice for many on Black Twitter. And our favorite one, talking about social platforms, is Megan Thee Stallion loves Pinterest. That is her favorite social media app, and that was a very big takeaway from the event.
And you don't think TikTok doesn't weigh in on that, or Instagram, some of the old ones, or new?
You know, it did. I think every platform has its own, you know, purpose, but these were the ones that were kind of called out. And specifically, Pinterest, you know, kind of came in as it's underrated. So many people said that after Megan Thee Stallion came out with saying it's her favorite app, and she said that she had deleted Instagram and TikTok off of her phone, but Pinterest she loves because she's able to curate it. And she didn't share her profile with us, unfortunately. I would love to see what's on Meg Thee Stallion's Pinterest. But that was why it was her favorite app. And it kind of came out. I think stocks also spiked a little bit, if I'm remembering correctly.
Wow.
And people love Pinterest. Yeah.
Wow.
I think one of the enjoyable things about Pinterest is that not every advertiser is there yet, though. So that may change the experience. But I'm also curious if during Social Media Week there was any conversation about the potential, and I'm realizing I'm skipping our hit or miss, so we will get back to that. But if there's any talk about the potential banning of TikTok and how advertisers are preparing for that, or is it more if it happens, it happens, and then we will respond? You know, are creators and advertisers setting up accounts on different social media or leaning in other ways? What are people saying about that?
Yeah, so this was definitely a hot topic. And our reporter who covers AI and tech, Trishla, she did a great job of kind of addressing this and handling that panel. But basically, she said, nah, we don't think there's going to be a ban. It could happen, but it probably won't happen. And in that case, you know, they did explore different scenarios of what could happen. But I think in today's world, like the world of creators has evolved so much that creators, yes, they have their TikTok channels, but they're really expanding their own brands beyond that. You know, they're creating products, they're creating other forms of revenue and other and working with brands, you know, so it's not just about that. But it's unlikely that a ban will happen. Hopefully, I mean, we'll see if we're right. But that was the general consensus.
I think
consensus.
Even if, you know, they ban Chinese company, they let somebody else own TikTok. I don't think people are talking about the demise of TikTok, more about controlling the Chinese ownership of the data or something like that. I think that's where the government concerns are. So, but you're talking about really different platforms. Like TikTok is mostly videos or a lot of videos, and it's really kind of organically created, whereas some of these others have more of a like an Instagram strategy or something like that. Instagram would be more graphic. And then you were talking about Twitter or X versus Threads. So are you seeing any real play in Threads? 'Cause you said it plateaued, but what does that exactly mean? Has it really, before it plateaued, did it grow? I mean, was there a lot of activity on Threads?
You know, I think we've covered this a bit on Adweek, just the general reception to Threads, and it's kind of like mixed feelings. It was a lukewarm welcome to it. People did sign up for it, but really after that, I don't believe it's seen more growth. You know, don't quote me if I'm wrong, but it's kind of reached, you know, all you can really do on there is follow other people and post your comments, whereas, and it was created to be a competitor to Twitter, but Twitter is still Twitter. You know, it doesn't really hold like the magic that it did and like fostering community. And people on there are chattering, but it's really not taking off like people thought it would.
What I have personally observed, and Annie, I wonder what you think about this, is what's happened with that is everybody signed up for Threads. I mean, I got up to speed on Threads pretty quickly. Most of my Instagram people went over to Threads, etc. But then there wasn't that much activity. But it wasn't like Twitter wasn't hurt, because I know a lot of people who did close down their Twitter account and they stopped writing on Twitter. They may not have moved over to Threads. I don't know what happened to their activity. But people I knew that I used to follow on Twitter, I can't find them anymore. I don't even know where they are. And I talked to somebody I knew who used to post every single day on Twitter. And she said, I just when Elon Musk came into the picture, I just closed it down. And that was the end of that. So that, I don't know if that's general. That's just anecdotal what I've seen. Annie, have you heard anything about like what I'm talking about?
I mean, I feel like I've made similar observations. I don't have any data to back that up, but it seems anecdotally that that's the case. And I agree with you that it felt like everybody, or at least a lot of professionals, set up Threads accounts in anticipation of if this is the next big thing, we want to be ready. Because I think, again, with the example of TikTok, some brands were caught a little flat-footed of kind of being beat to the punch on good TikTok content. And so I think you saw people preparing for it to be the next big thing, but then people didn't really know what to do on the site.
Right.
And to Lucy's point, you know, it's supposed to replace Twitter, so it should have been maybe very obvious what you were supposed to do on the site. But on the other hand, like, Twitter took off with certain use cases and value that people were getting, and then has become sort of segmented in the network of whether you want news or to follow people or see funny tweets or, you know, so I think you need that really clear use case, and Threads didn't really present that super clearly.
Yeah, I would say Twitter is also really was really good and probably still is at keeping up with like a current news item. You know that if something happened, people go to Twitter to see what the latest chatter is. And I don't know if Threads fully delivered on that. But there's also the big issue on Twitter about misinformation versus right. disinformation, which is something that came up a lot at Social Media Week as well. And our reporter, Trish, again, she covered how much information on Twitter really is false on there. And that actually caused me to close down my own Twitter after I saw that, because it's just not good for one's mental. So that's kind of where it is now. We didn't see the mass exodus that we thought would continue. There has been fallout. And it's more of misinformation versus disinformation on there.
I think it's sort of interesting as an Instagram user, as any good millennial is. I feel like I often encounter advertisements for Threads. I get like Meta is trying to push me toward Threads with something that looks like content I normally like on Instagram. But at least personally, it kind of drives me away, because I get a little annoyed that they're trying to, it's like this knowledge of their persuasion tactics that I feel like they're trying to force Threads on me. And it sort of causes me to back off. So I would be curious if other consumers feel similarly, or if there's been any observation about their strategies for attracting new users.
For sure. I don't think anyone wants to feel forced to use an app, especially, this next Gen Z. They don't want to be forced or, sold. Like, everybody hates the sales language and the pushing and all that. And I think that might have turned people off for sure.
Especially by corporations that aren't entirely trusted by everybody.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot of kind of doubt out there right now. People, we've heard how, I mean, sure, you guys have heard the word authenticity like 10 million times.
Yes.
It's the buzzword. But that's really what we heard, is just kind of this audience is a little bit doubtful today of what they see. And it's kind of hard to tell what's real and what's not, especially now with AI.
Oh, yeah, that's a whole other issue. What's generative AI and what's authentic voice, et cetera. So did you talk or do you follow at some of the trending items this week? Have you talked about some of the trending news items or what's trending?
Yeah, I mean, we're still kind of covering all this content that came out of Social Media Week. Something that keeps coming up is that long form content is making a comeback. This was kind of a hot take that from our head of social, Sammy, that was mentioned a while back, and it kept coming up during Social Media Week by creators like Ricky Thompson and DeAndre Brown. And that is something that's been coming up and we'll see a lot more of.
So what exactly does that mean?
So, long gone is the time, remember Vine, we had those 6-second clips, we had our short form moment, and then, we had long form, we went to YouTube, and then we went back to short form. And now long form is making its comeback. You see it on TikTok. TikTok is allowing now longer videos to run. Instagram stories are getting more interesting. People are changing up formats. So we'll be seeing a lot more of that this year. Probably brands to keep up will have to invest in more long form storytelling.
Is there like a technical amount of time that makes it short versus long? Like what is it? What's long form? How long is it?
I think it varies by platform, so I can't speak to that specifically, but I'm talking by long form, I mean like multiple minutes. I would say like 5 to 10 minutes. That's considered long form.
And is it typically more of a narrative than is that also what characterizes it, goes deeper into a topic?
I think it depends how people choose to tell their stories on there. I mean, but we know that storytelling has just grown more and more nuanced, and it's been more challenging, and people want to see a real story on there instead of just like a product flashed on there or just like any kind of ramble. That's kind of where I see long form content going.
Do you see any trajectory for long form content? I guess it would be short form content that unfolds into long form. I guess I'm thinking about the phenomenon or the interest in the TikTok story of Who the F Did I Marry? And then somebody recorded it and put it on YouTube, and somebody put it on a podcast. And it was kind of, I think what was, to me at least, really enticing other than the story itself was like how it unfolds over all these short-term form contents over time. And that seems like there could be big opportunity for advertisers there too.
Yeah, I think it could vary in different formats. I mean, we saw it on Twitter with the threads going on. You know, you could tell a whole story, and we saw that really utilized a while back. And I'm not really on there anymore to see if that's the case. But these are the things, like, there's such different ways to do it. It doesn't even just have to be video. It can be like there's just a longer story to tell these days.
Yeah. Can you give us any real examples? Annie gave us one that was interesting. But since you were talking about this a lot, can you give us some successful stories about exactly what you're talking about and how it evolves?
Yeah. So the one example that comes to mind, it's a little bit not as recent, but Hilton last year did the 10-minute TikTok video that went on to win awards. You know, it really, like, people watched the 10-minute video a lot. And that was something that's kind of, I feel like, for that moment in time when long form really hadn't made its comeback, that was really telling. And that was a really good example of how they did it. And it went on to get a lot of recognition for it.
Actually, we had the Hilton guy on our show, I think, and he was telling us about what they were doing with that. So that's an old one. Have you, Annie, what was the one you were talking about? Was that with a brand, or that was just a TikTok kind of influencer moment?
Not with a brand, and I also don't believe she was an influencer.
It's a
woman telling
her
story of sort of being, like, catfished in real life.
Really followed it.
Yeah, I think most of the long-form content I can think of, kind of in the, for lack of a better word, the advertainment space, is, like, Chipotle's love story. And Chipotle's had a few of these, actually, where brands tell these stories, although I've seen it more in YouTube or through podcasts, or, you know, in the Barbie example, an actual feature length film, where it's designed just to be entertainment in theory, but it's actually pushing you the product at the end of the day.
How does it push it to product? Is it more like product placement, products incidentally part of the story, like a Trojan horse, or is it leading to a soundbite about the product? Like, exactly how does the product get integrated into these long forms?
Well, so I'm thinking of Uber Eats last year, or 2 years ago, I believe, they did a big Halloween push. They did a little kind of a short with Keke Palmer, and it was, like, very, you know, campy. It mocked, like, the horror film thing, but in it there were a lot of Easter eggs, and the incentive was whatever codes you saw or anything, there was X amount of codes in there for Uber, and that's what you could. If you got all of them, you won, like, major prizes, you know, or things like that. So there's an incentive there to keep up with the story. It may be in the form of Easter eggs, or, you know, coupons or things like that, where people really have to kind of lean forward in their seats and really tune in. Or, for example, like Taco Bell, I know they also have, like, their campy kind of short films as well. So people are kind of really expanding. And at the end of the day, I think product is important in there, but all of these narratives do have to tie into the brand's overarching message. Like, it can't just be, you know, Taco Bell making a movie about a park outside. I don't know. You know, it has to be something that really ties in with the audience. It feels like Taco Bell made it, you know, and things like that. So it's really about, it's an extension of the brand in a different way.
And the motive.
Sometimes it's interesting the variation of subtlety, though, because, like, the Barbie example is extremely obvious that it's Barbie the whole time. That's the point. But the Chipotle example was a lot more subtle. Like, the Chipotle was part of the love story, and you're definitely, I mean, I totally agree with, like, the look and feel was intended to be consistent with the brand, but it also created, I guess, back to that, like, persuasion knowledge, this link between these good feelings that I didn't feel like Chipotle was forcing me to feel, but I just had and then carried with me when I thought about different, you know, quick service restaurant options later.
So this long form is a form of brand entertainment kind of stuff. So it's providing a story or something that you want to watch because it's entertaining in and of itself. And maybe there's additional incentives like the Easter eggs you were saying, or something you can win, or some kind of competition, which is definitely different than the 15-second kind of video where you're trying to And we were, I was talking about that in my visual marketing class today. When you have a very short video and you've got to get their attention before they leave, you're going to fine-tune every single second of that video to try to get engagement right away. Because if you don't get it within the first 2 seconds, people scroll right past it. And so you're really maximizing every kind of visual cue you can do. You know, you don't do any long pans. You get right to the story. You make sure the brand is right there in the first frame, or you're going to not get any benefit of the video if people don't watch it all the way through, which most of the time they're not. In these long form, then you're saying it's several minutes. So they must have some incentive to stay there. It's not necessarily going to catch them in the first few seconds. They're anticipating. They're going into it with an expectation it's going to be entertaining and it's going to be worth the time. Is that how it's going?
Yeah, it has to be entertaining and worth the time. And I think, just like you mentioned, it's a fine line that brands are treading, because you want to capture their attention in the first few seconds, but you also don't want to flash your brand or product and force it in there in the first few seconds, because then people know, oh, I'm about to get hit with a sales pitch, you know? So it's a fine line to tread. And I think the ones that will really kind of win the long form game are the ones that will find a way to tell their stories without it being overly salesy or forceful.
So I'm curious, though, if you think that this long form content, I guess two questions. One is, if you think it's a better fit for different audiences, because there's the general stereotype of Gen Z has no attention span, so they need all short form content. I know this is big in the music industry with, like, should we even make music videos anymore? But then we watch 10 minutes of Taylor Swift's version. So, like, if it works more or less for different audiences, and then also for different brands. I'm sort of thinking about the brand recently, and I think you will remember it better than me, that created the songs, the AI-generated songs about their food. Do you
yes.
remember what I'm talking about?
I think so. Wrote about it. I think, is it the Biscuits brand or something? Or was it Red Lobster about their
It was Red Lobster, yes.
Yeah, about
and
their
they
biscuits.
They talked about their cheesy biscuits. And that seemed like a very weird, I mean, I see the earned media play there, but I also was like, is anyone listening to that? I guess, who do you see these long-form content, whether it's visual, audio, or both, like, working better for?
Well, I think it varies, right? Let me ask you, do you guys think the Barbie movie was a whole big Mattel, you know, Barbie brand play? Because it kind of had, like, product integration in there, but there was an actual story and it was a movie. But one can even argue that might have been, like, long form content. So I think it varies, and I think it depends on the audience.
Most people will say Barbie was a huge success. Let's just say there is a hit. Yeah. That's a clear hit.
Well, sure. I will say when I teach about Barbie, though, I teach it as it's an ad that you actually paid to watch and sit and watch for 2 hours or however yep. long it ran. And I know Mattel has, I think, 141 or 100 something movies in the works that they're going to leverage their IP with. And I think one of the things they talk about is that how story ready is the product? Like, can you tell narratives around the story? And because you're not just going to get a customer to come watch it just because you spend a gazillion dollars on advertising the movie and brand partnerships.
Yeah. And I think the world, it depends on this moment in time, right? Like, I think the Barbie movie, it was really good timing for that, because just all the conversations around women's rights and things like that, it naturally, this audience gravitated to it. It has to have some kind of relevance and chatter in today's world to really have interest in it.
I'm Barbara Kahn, along with my guest co-host, Annie Wilson. This is Marketing Matters, and we're joined today by Luz Corona, who's the community editor at Adweek, and she's talking about some of the things that happened at her social media conference or whatever it was this week. What'd you say it was this week? Where you were talking about some of the big trends that are going on in the social platforms. You just mentioned one really big one, the idea of this long form is coming back as opposed to maybe the short forms. What were some of the other trends that you observed during this past week?
Well, what there was a very interesting panel. This was my favorite. Just the role that creators will be in this year's election. Creators will be critical in this year's election. And here's why. We had a few folks in the industry speak up on this. Khalil Green, you know, spoke a lot about Gen Z showing up in the political realm in different ways, and this is the different ways that Gen Z shows up in this space, especially creators, is putting dollars behind brands they connect with and boycotting others. So they talked a lot about, and we can get into it, they talked a lot about the role that creators will play in this year's election because there's so much on the line.
Yeah, let's get into it. Give me some examples of what you're talking about.
Sure. So we talked on this a little bit earlier about misinformation versus disinformation, but there were some really interesting stats that came out of this conversation. So, for example, 1/3 of Americans believe that Joe Biden didn't win the election a few years ago, and that's a direct result from false information spread by, you know,
how many excess. Americans? 1/3, did you say?
1/3 of Americans. This was a stat that was said on stage. So, you know, it's a lot about people, younger generations especially, are flocking to these social media platforms to get their information. So you have publishers like Betches, who has a platform where people can come to for factual information. And they're a publisher that's not trying to replace traditional media. They're just doing it in a way that really speaks to these younger audiences, and it incorporates entertainment and pop culture. So you're kind of seeing a different feed of political information, and you're seeing it evolve in different ways.
And so you were saying there's this misinformation. So that one, Betches, is one that says they're going to give you truth. Is that kind of what's going on? But it's truth within their filter. And so what were the words you said? Misinformation versus disinformation? Is that what you said?
Yes. Misinformation versus disinformation.
Okay. So how are you defining? I know misinformation is outright lies. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I believe so. I'm actually looking it up just so I'm not misinforming your listeners.
There's a lot of ways to create bias. One is to outright lie, you know, and that's one issue. Another way is to omit certain facts and only tell, you know, so it's kind of misinformation by omission, but what you're saying is literally true and can be fact checked. Then there just can be interpretation. You know, you can look at the same reporting of the same event by lots of different media and see a lot of different ways that they're covering it. So it's the use of language, the shading of it, the emotional words they cover around it. So were those some of the things you were talking about? And are there different social media platforms that are known for one approach or another that maybe you can trust or not trust, or they're going to come through with a point of view that's going to meet your needs?
Yeah. So to clarify, misinformation, like you said, it's false or inaccurate information. Disinformation is deliberate and it can be malicious. And that's kind of what spreads. And that can be really dangerous, especially to, you know, the current political space.
So disinformation is more like propaganda or something like that with a motivation to persuade in a certain direction. That's what disinformation is. And misinformation is just something that's not true, whatever truth is.
False or inaccurate.
Right.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah. So you have publishers like Betches or Now This, you know, they're really fact checking what they're putting out there to avoid this very problem. The problem is that there may be some creators or other publishers that don't fact check as quickly, and I won't call them out, you know, but these are the ones that it's very dangerous because these platforms like YouTube and these social platforms, they don't really have a firm grasp quite yet on handling this issue, misinformation versus disinformation. You still have, you know, the conspiracy stuff out there and everything. And these platforms, they're still trying to figure out how to get control over this.
Yeah.
Well, and I think to Barbara's point, you know, there can also just be biased information, which may be intentional or unintentional. But I'm curious if you think this is a positive direction, because we could argue, you know, the more mainstream media has its own critics. We are constantly listening to sources that give us information through their bias lens. Sometimes it's misinformation and disinformation too. I see the inclination for consumers to turn to creators who they believe they trust or they have some sort of pseudo relationship with that is at least going to filter it through a lens that resonates with them. But that feels also potentially very dangerous in terms of even more fragmentation of information than we already have.
Yeah, I think creators have a very big responsibility. And this, the general consensus coming out of this panel was that everything is political these days. Creators are political, whether they say they are or not, simply in the sense they don't have to endorse a certain candidate, but they do have a stance on different causes out there. And that also is considered political. So I think it really depends on what you're putting out there, how you're fact checking, and how people are consuming media. They do need to check multiple sources and everything and have their go-tos. So overall, I think it's positive. I think we have to be cautious. Yeah. Okay. I want to stay optimistic because there is a hunger to learn more, especially from the younger generations. And that's really important.
All right. Let's end on that note, Luz. Thank you so much for joining us. Let's end with it. Yep. It's a hit. We've got more information out there. We're going to learn how to handle it. Thank you so much for joining us today. And so where can our listeners go to keep up with you and all the stuff that you're monitoring and looking at?
You know, I would say LinkedIn for anything marketing related or what we're up to on Yeah, That's Probably an Ad. Yeah, I would say LinkedIn is where I spend most of the time now and Instagram.
And how can they find you on LinkedIn?
So you can just search Luz Corona. I believe it's LinkedIn.com/Luz Corona. And you'll find me on there and connect with me. Let me know.
That sounds great. Thank you very much. That's all we have time for today. I'd like to thank our producers, Dion Simpkins and Dana Cash. We're here every Wednesday from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. We replay our show several times throughout the week. You can follow us on Knowledge at Wharton Podcasts, and you can also follow Business Radio at SXM Business for information about all our programming. Thank you for listening today. We'll be back next week. Till then, this has been Marketing Matters. I'm Barbara Kahn, here with my guest co-host, Annie Wilson, Business Radio, Sirius XM 132.